You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Welcome to the Best Practices Show. My name is Kirk Barron, and I'm your host, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the country. And if you're joining us, or you have been joining us, you know how much we love education. And that is really just our goal here, just to talk to some of the best minds in dentistry so that you guys walk away and create a better practice and a better life. And so I hope you're enjoying the journey with us. Now, a lot of you, you're going to see a superstar that we got to know. And Nate, I got to know you. I'd heard about you, and then I got to know you through the COVID conference last year. And over 38,000 of you opted in for this conference. Now, I get this question a lot. People are like, here's how it works. So a lot of young dentists, dental students all joined last year. And some of you are like, okay, what do you guys do? Well, if you're joining us for the podcast for the first time, because I know you guys aren't watching the videos because we look at the metrics, but over 140,000 audio downloads, which I don't care. I actually really enjoy. I'm just so happy we're doing something. Somebody's listening to it. So I'll tell you what, if you're listening for the first time, and you're on a podcast, so if you're on Stitcher or iTunes or whatever, do me a favor. Go down. You see that little button right there? It says subscribe. Do me a favor. Just click that button that says subscribe, because I want you to keep showing up with us, because you're going to see every single week I'm going to bring you a brand new speaker, expert in dentistry, and give you some great thought processes so you can go back and create a better practice and better life. I want you to enjoy dentistry. And a big part of it is just thinking about your thinking, improving the way you think about dentistry. Secondly, if you haven't joined our Best Practices private Facebook group, make sure you join us over there. Again, we started that last year. Still don't know how it works, but it's growing and people are helping people back there. If you're looking for a community you want to be a part of where there's no egos, everybody's just back there to help each other, check it out. It's called the Best Practices Powered by Act Dental. And then lastly, people ask me almost every single day, like, what do you do? And while we love the education, our core business is we're practice coaches. So here's what we do. Like, if you're a practice owner and you're thinking, I got this practice, but it's stressful. Like, maybe my team's not getting along like they should. I care about them. I want to improve conditions for them, which will ultimately make me a happier dentist. That's what we do. Also, you might be thinking, well, I don't want to give away 35% of write-offs because I'm involved with all these PPOs. Maybe I want to reduce that a little bit and not work so hard. That's also what we do. And the last thing is, if you got a crazy work schedule and you're like, I don't want to be working evenings and Saturdays and all these crazy days. Well, that's also what we do. We find people can create a better practice and a better life if you just think better. So if you need some help, join us over at actdental.com. You can also see Act Dental U, where we've got great master classes like Nate's back there on materials, just so you guys can enjoy dentistry. And speaking of enjoying dentistry, Nate, you, again, I am a big fan of yours. And, you know, Bill Robbins and I remember the first time we had you on because, you know, you studied under Burgess and you're still friends with Burgess. And then you get to see these young talents come aboard and you were one of them. And you joined us during the conference, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this kid is great. And okay, so I'm going to brag about you a little bit more. So we had you on the masterclass. I didn't even know what you were talking about the whole time with materials. Like, you could tell you're super passionate about it. And we still use Nate-isms around here, like crazy Einstein. You gave us so much good fodder for like how to communicate about interesting stuff. I just think you're a great educator. You're passionate about what you do. But if somebody's listening or watching for the first time and they don't know who Nate Lawson is, who's Nate Lawson?
Well, thanks, Kirk. First, I want to say thanks so much for having me on here. And it's funny because, like, we were talking briefly before this started about how post-COVID at the school, we still have a lot of people that aren't here. So my floor is pretty empty. And, like, this is, like, the highlight of my day getting to talk to you. One, I mean, just so fun to talk to, Kirk. But it's just, like, nice to get to connect and have this conversation. So this was really – I'm excited to do this. And this really is a highlight of my day. And, but, yeah, a little bit about me, so my background is when I was in college, I was an engineering student, and that's where I met Burgess. I was a pre-dental. I wanted to do some research. I went to the dental school at LSU. I was a college student at Tulane, and I just ran into Burgess, and I got this lucky encounter where I just kind of got assigned to him, and I worked for him from my sophomore year to my senior year of college. And then when it was time to apply for dental schools, that my senior was Hurricane Katrina, Burgess left LSU, went to Alabama and started there. And Burgess called me and said, "Hey, would you ever think about applying to dental school in Alabama?" And I was like, maybe not. Like, I'm from Chicago. I had never been to Alabama before. And then I came down and I saw him and I thought, well, they had this DMD PhD program as a 6-year program. And, I was going to get to work with him. And I thought, well, that's probably a once in a lifetime experience. So I did that program, the DMD PhD program with Burgess. And then I left, went back to Chicago for a little while, practiced, had like a quarter life crisis, as I called it, tried a bunch of stuff. And then he called me about coming back here and teaching at the dental school. I thought it was going to be like a 1-year stint while I figured out what I was doing in my life, and ended up just really loving it, and been here since 2014 teaching and doing research. So like what we do, I kind of followed in his footsteps, is we test dental materials. We test we have a lab where we test to see, all the physical and mechanical properties of dental materials. We have a research clinic, and we have a residency program, a 2-year program where we have students come in and they test all these different types of dental materials. And then, of course from that, again, following in Burgess's footsteps, he's just a great educator and, making the topic of dental materials, which people usually don't like, something more interesting. So that was something that I wanted to do too. So that was something I started doing very slowly. I used to get called out to go to these little places to speak to like 3 people, drive 2.5 hours and speak to 3 people. And I've been really lucky, maybe about a year or so ago, get hooked up with Seattle Study Club and some of these great organizations, getting to speak more, which is a big passion. And then, and kind of like one of the things that we're going to be talking about today, and one of the things, topics I wanted to bring up was, it started maybe actually a little bit before we went into quarantine. I got more involved with social media dentistry. So like, when I think of social media dentistry, I think of Facebook and Instagram as being probably 2 of the most popular forums, I guess, for social media dentistry. So with Facebook, I there's a lot of these closed Facebook groups. Some of them have up to almost 50,000 people following them. And those are somewhere where I think there's a lot of dentists go to congregate, and they find post questions and find information from their peers. And then there's the other big thing in social media dentistry, which is Instagram, which is basically just like a picture book of all of these different types of, clinical cases. And, in some ways, I want to talk a little bit about sometimes when it's not so great, but, there are parts of it that are really great. I remember I graduated dental school and I was in 2011 when I graduated dental school, and I used to search on the internet to try to find examples of how to do stuff clinically, like how to do better crown preps or veneer preps or whatever I wanted to learn how to do. And there were very few information out there. There was I remember Newton Fall used to have some of these beautiful composite layering stuff that he posted on YouTube. I remember one of my favorite things to do when I graduated dental school is I used to listen to Mike Dottola and Chairside Live. Mike Dottola, I think, is just one of the funniest people ever. And you know, he had that program out there, you know, for a lot of us young dentists that were graduated at the time. And like, but as far as like social media dentistry, you know, there wasn't Instagram out and Facebook didn't really have a lot of dentistry. And there wasn't a lot of places to go to get nice visual pictures of like, or in videos of, you know, examples of the type of dentistry we want to do. So that I think has been really nice. Even for me, like learning how to do some of the things in dentistry, just to be able to look through some pictures to get some ideas of what prep should look like or how, you know, to do some of these matrix techniques and things like that have been actually, I think, really great. But yeah, some of the things that I think would be the, you know, there's the dark side of it too. The one where, as with any type of social media.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little deeper about that because you don't explain the why, because you and I were chatting before we went live. Now I'll go back to this, like Dottola. I mean, everybody, if you've ever listened to Dottola, he makes everything funny and engaging almost to the point where I had him on last week and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so funny. I got to think about that for a second because he's looking smart. He's also a good dude. And so for me, when I got to see him for the first time, he was one of the first that I was able to see an educator be entertaining. Do you know what I mean? And I mean, I remember laughing so hard. I missed half of the program because he was on a rant and it was almost like watching like a great comedian go, wait a minute, there's another thing. And then you get this one patient, but I agree with you. We need those moments. And I'll go back. And I want to say this about you too, is, you know, you have a different style and you are just you. So if you're a study club director, or you have any type of dental society, you're looking for an entertaining, fun lecture, I'm just telling you, and you haven't had Nate speak, you're missing out, because the guy can make the most mundane and up-to-date clinical stuff that everybody has questions about, and he'll break it down in very research-based things that even the best clinical minds are going, well, I can't argue that. That's like solid information. And I feel like the materials things is a moving target. Like it's a very dynamic environment. It's not a like, oh, here it is, and that's the way it'll be forever because it's changing. But let's go back to why we're talking in the first place. So I want you to describe the why a little bit because you're how old? How old are you, Nate? I got to ask.
I'm 37.
Okay. So you're 37. I'm 51. So that just gives our listeners just a little. So social media is really, it's a very interesting dynamic. It's cool. And then there's the dark side. Go to a little bit deeper of why this topic is so important and passionate that you're talking about today.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny because I used to think social media was a taboo thing to talk about because it was like a childish thing. I never wanted to acknowledge it at school because I felt like it wasn't a serious topic. I should be focusing on writing peer-reviewed manuscripts and things like that. And then I realized, though, that social media is just where we spend so much of our time. And I'll sometimes I'll sit with my wife and my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law, and we'll talk with my father-in-law, my mother-in-law will ask, like, where do you find out, you know, where you want to go to eat? Where do you want to get your haircut? They actually, I go to their house. They still have the, I don't even know which newspaper they have. They have a news, they sit and they read the newspaper and sometimes they read print, but they still also go to a decent amount to Facebook. But when it comes to, you know, my wife and I guess kind of my generation or, you know, and I think there's a range of that generation where we get almost all the information off of social media. It hit me one day when if anybody's watching the video, my hair is really long now, but I used to get this haircut where they got this little, they etch a little part in the side of it. And I get that haircut all the time in Chicago. And when I moved down to Birmingham, I couldn't figure out a way to get it done. And I went to a bunch of different super cuts, blah, blah, blah. And my wife went on Instagram and she showed me, oh, here, look at this lady. She cuts hair like that. And then I've been going to her for 5 years. And it's all from what she found on Instagram. I was like, wow, there's really a power to the social media. We spend so much time on it. But, you know, I guess the downside, of course, of social media, and I remember experiencing this a lot when I was, you know, my post-dental school was a very kind of turbulent time for me. I call it my quarter-life crisis. I was trying to figure out my place in the world. Like, I thought you graduate from dental school and, like, that everything was handed to you on a silver platter, and you'd have a great job, and you know exactly what you want to do for the rest of life. And it was very kind of confusing to me what I wanted to do. And I remember going on Facebook and you know, looking at people, you know, seeing like they had everything figured out and great job and this and that. And I think we all know it, and we all know that syndrome where you only see the fun stuff on Facebook. And so that, you know, it affected me very much in my personal life. But then there's the same thing in dentistry. You know, like I said, when I first started opening up Instagram and I'd see some of these preps and these cases, I was like, wow, this is, you know, really amazing. And I learned a lot of stuff about how to change up some techniques. But then after a while, I started looking and I was thinking to myself, you know, these are really good though. I mean, like, and when I'm doing my, you know, I'll have a lot of time in academics to sit there and work on a class two or something like that. And I'll take pictures of it. But when I'm done, sometimes I look at them like, still doesn't look like this thing I saw on Instagram. I mean, that thing was, you know, a work of art. It belongs in like a museum. And I don't know. And one of the things that hit me, I was thinking about talking about this today was I was looking at a post of a buddy of mine, and he posted this really, this case that now I look back and I look, I think it's really nice. But when I first saw it, you know, the rubber dam was a little bit torn and the, you know, not every edge was perfect. And maybe there's a little bit of composite left inside of the old composite left in the prep. And I thought to myself, well, look at that piece of crap. And then I thought to myself later, no, that's not a piece of crap. That's actually very beautiful dentistry. Like if I did that on any given day, I would go home and feel great about it. I just maybe didn't get to look at it, you know, blown up to 10 times size. And it's also, you know, it didn't come after I just looked at like three different things that looked like they were just the smoothest, they looked nicer than regular teeth. So I do think that that's, you know, one of the disadvantages of social media, and then also social media dentistry, and I think that there was, you know, probably probably a part of that too. You know, when and Kirk, I'm sure, you know, within the lecture world, you always have to wonder anytime you go and see anything on a lecture, you wonder like how applicable is that to real life. And I get that a lot of times when I lecture too, people will say, oh, you know, sometimes they'll enjoy part of the say that, you know, I appreciate that you didn't like try to say that you have to do 17 steps and present some esoteric concept. It was more kind of real world stuff. But, you know, sometimes, yeah, when I'm watching a presentation and I'm seeing some of the dentistry there, like I wonder, is that real?
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, you're very, I mean, you're just talented at a lot of things, and, you know, you're rethinking even how you're mentioning how you look at social now, but I often wonder with these kids coming out, you know, how, because, you know, dentistry is isolating enough with being a dentist. And then when you get into a world of comparison, and I can't remember who said, I think Roosevelt said, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. So if you ever want to suck the joy out of your life, just start comparing your life to everybody else's. Cause you know, we have all these blessings, and you know, as a dentist, you know, more than anything, you get to train great young dentists. It's all about progress. Even the best dentists like Bill Robbins will say, look, you got to forgive yourself from work you did years ago. Like, cause you can see a crown that you did 20 years ago. Your only hope is that you're getting a little bit better, but where do you find, like, how do you find that happy medium, I guess, which is the question when you're looking at all this. And I hate to beat a dead horse, but like Social Dilemma was a frightening movie. Did you see that yet? I don't know.
Yeah, 75% of it. Yeah.
Okay. So I and it's one of those things you're like, you don't know what's up or down anymore because of all these things. And I guess I'll couple, let me ask you the question. Where do I find the happy medium in that from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I was thinking of the story. I was doing a, I had my knee replaced by, or not a, an ACL replacement by an orthopedic surgeon. And then we kind of became friends and he became my patient. And I was doing a crown prep on him and I was sitting there and I was on my third final impression and I was looking at it and I'm like staring at the final impression, like looking at one part of the margin. And he's like, what's wrong? Is he like, is it not good? I was like, I don't know. I just don't know if it's perfect and I don't know if it's great. And he said to me, you know, the opposite or the enemy of great, the enemy of good is great or something like that. Basically meaning like, you know, there's a point that you can get things like, you know, you get 95% of the way and then to get the extra 5%, sometimes you kill yourself and you sometimes even make it worse. It did make me a little concerned because like I hope he didn't think that way when he did my knee. Like I hope he didn't all the way. But I did think, well, I was like, yeah, well, okay, this third final impression, I'm not gonna torture you anymore. I think it's gonna be okay. Yeah. But yeah, it is, you know, how good, you know, how perfect you have to make your dentistry. I guess it's, you know, for me it's kind of like to be able to like live with myself. I have to have it to like a, I don't know. I'm still trying to find that like a place where if I, you know, when I'm, it's a lot of times where I run into trouble, where my dentistry doesn't come out quite as perfect is when sometimes it's when I'm pressed with time and I'm fighting this thing with, it's like, do I want to spend, you know, 5 minutes, going around and finding this extra material that's, you know, this one special wedge that I think might work, and or do I want to, you know, switch out three more wedges to see if this one's going to get in there perfectly? Where I, you know, have to make some compromises in the quality of my dentistry. I think I have like a base level of where I want to get, and then I try to get to that level, and then, you know, try to exceed it as often as I can. But yeah, it's like definitely, you know, the stuff I see on social media, I don't think that anybody should use that. I mean, it's great to aspire to that. And I feel guilty saying this because, I mean, I don't think that any, you know, is it bad for me to sit here and say, like, don't aspire to making teeth look better than they did before every single time you were, you know, restore one. But I think we just have to be honest with ourselves that you can't do that every day. And like I remember even Burgess used to say, you know, when we do clinical trials sometimes, in, you know, and somebody be up there presenting the results of a clinical trial and they say, oh, this is a representative molar at 7 years follow-up, and Burgess is like, you know, that means the best one they had in the whole study. That's what representative means when you do a clinical trial. Like, you know, it's like you know, not everyone is gonna turn out, you know, perfect. So
yeah. And I totally agree with you. And I don't have any answers. I mean, I remember the great Bill Lockard used to say to me and to other young dentists, I'll never forget this. He's like, perfection is just deadly. Don't even, he said, excellence was always my goal. Perfection was God's job. There were days that it worked out and that wasn't my doing. All the conditions were right for that. And then I heard somebody else, and I can't remember else who said this, but they said it in the COVID conference last year, don't go looking for love in likes. Find love in, like, you know, when you do a composite in class two and it's the patient loves, find love in that, not in how many of your colleagues, you know, would approve or disapprove. And I mean, that's why we're asking these questions. Now, another thing you brought up, and this is why Nate is so brilliant. I want you to talk about the chasm between, you know, simplicity and complex, because you were describing like we have this world of like, mm-hmm. educators and education that makes things simple. And then you got this whole side of complex, and you can feel guilty going too strong to one side or the other. Can you go deeper on that one too?
Yeah. So this is bringing a little bit back to my world of dental materials, because that's another thing that I see, is that, you know, right now when we look at the way the industry is moving as far as dental materials, is that we're trying to get simpler and more efficient. And there's a trend though I see now where there's pushback and being like, hey, sometimes simpler isn't better. You know, we should go back to the way that we did things before, and, you know, which be this new stuff is actually worse. And I think, you know, when I look at it, I think that there's a little bit of both. I mean, I do think that there are material improvements. Like when we look at new materials that have been simplified, it wasn't just that, you know, that there weren't any improvements made in them. Like some of the single bottle adhesives, when we test them in the lab, test really well. And, you know, when I look at like a bulk fill composite, I know bulk fill can sometimes be like a dirty word, but a bulk fill does have a deeper depth of cure. It's maintained most of its mechanical properties. Some of them have lower shrinkage than like conventional fill composites. And you don't have to place them in 4 millimeter increments. You can choose to place them how you want. So like, you know, sometimes like, sometimes the it's not so, you know, when we're moving to more simple, it's not just for convenience. It's like there are sometimes material improvements that allow simplified materials to actually be pretty good. And then the other thing is, yeah, sometimes, you know, we on social media, maybe we'll see people doing these really complex layered composites. And I remember talking to one of the reps in my state and being like, how many dentists, when they order composite, order enamel and dentin shade, and how many people just order body? He's like, I don't know the last time I sold enamel and dentin shade composite. And I remember always feeling really guilty if I'm sitting there doing a composite and I'm not layering a class 4 and not layering it. Like, am I not doing good dentistry if I'm just doing body shade composite? But, right. You know, again, that's the same thing with like simplified adhesive. I remember sitting down with the company and the company being like, you know, what of our product line do you think is a really flagship product? And I said, well, you know, your 2-bottle adhesive is regarded as like one of the gold standard best adhesives out there. I said, oh, that's interesting, but we don't really sell very much of that. We sell the single bottle adhesive. So I don't know. I guess I see the two things kind of related. That there's the what sometimes you see in a lecture, sometimes you see in social media versus what's actually being done. So it's not always exactly the same.
Yeah. So, and then I guess that's why we always, you and I gravitate to these people that are like real all the time. Yeah. You know, I'll never forget Bill Robbins said this. He goes, I know there's some of you that sit in your chair on Sunday night and you're like, oh, I can't wait to go to work tomorrow and it's Monday. He goes, I am not one of them. And I was like, fell over. And he's like, some people think all I do is full mouth rehabs. No, it's a small part of my practice, but it's a fun. And I was like, in that moment, I'm like, oh, this is my guy. Like, just like, he's honest, real. And I think that's one thing that we really gravitate to. And I do love seeing failures. You know, Seattle Study Club has done an extraordinary job of like, let me show you what I just screwed up, like not too long ago. So this,
Kirk, I think that's a beauty of ACT, is you've kind of like, I think you've screened, I mean, you don't have slouch people on this, on the podcast or on ACT Dental U. I mean, it's like, I think that you've done, I mean, it is, that's actually kind of one of the, that's a service I think you're providing, is the screening for people that are going to be honest with you. And yeah, I mean, it's like sometimes Bill Robbins will, email me and ask me about material stuff. And I'm like, he's like a legend to me. But the fact that he would humble himself and ask me even the smallest materials question about anything is like, I don't know. Like, he's like, yeah, the people that you bring on the show are none of them. They're all not just great educators, good clinicians, but yeah, that having that like, realness, like bringing that realness to you is, I think, something to really value. And I think that's something you've done by screening some of the people that you've been on to the show. And sometimes you miss that, that's a thing about Instagram and social media, is there's no filter with like peer reviewed research, like you can have, even though it's slow and it's boring to read it, but it has to pass peer review. And sometimes on social media, you're not going to get that. And you're going to get someone's opinion. And sometimes if you have, you can get ideas from that, but it's kind of can be a little dangerous sometimes to act solely on those ideas.
Yeah. You know, it's good and bad. And you hang out with me long enough, you'll be like, this guy isn't very smart at all. But you know, I feel like I'm turning my dad a little bit. Your filter kind of goes away. But then you also get this other software and it's called your crap detector. And so your crap detector, you're like, I've seen this before. Like, I'm not, whatever. And it's not good, bad, or indifferent. I think as you age and you start enjoying whatever you're doing even more and more, you just find that your favorite people care about the same things. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff out there, but there's stuff that I'm like, I don't really care about any of it. Like, this is so like not even important, you know, type of thing. And I think that's where every dentist has just got to find their place. But it's important to you get to talk to all these young dentists. Like, give me the word on the street as you talk to new people coming into dentistry. What's your word of advice to them when they go out in the world? I mean, anything that sticks out?
Yeah. I mean, I graduated in 2011. I have a decent amount of regrets, to be honest, like about things that I didn't do and I didn't do earlier. When I first got out, to take you into my quarter life crisis. So what happened was I graduated and I actually started a program. I did it for a semester and then I quit. And then, so I was really left in this, I hadn't really been looking for a job. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was living in Chicago. And so I started working for a couple of DSOs. I mean, one or I think a couple of DSOs. And it was funny. I was like considered the old dentist there. Because I had worked a little bit before I finished my PhD. So I had like a half a year experience on the other dentist I was working at. So like me with like 6 months of experience was like the seasoned dentist in the clinic and our DSOs. And like one of my biggest regrets, I think, was not getting good mentorship and not finding mentorship when I graduated. And that's easier said than done. I think that, you know, when I might have known that I should have gotten mentorship, but I had literally no idea where I was going to get it from. And, you know, maybe I'd just find an older dentist in one of the clinics I worked for. I think that, you know, to put a little plug in for something like Seattle Study Club is that, you know, now being involved with good study clubs and finding places, people that are passionate about dentistry. Like I used to think, you know, people didn't want to pass on knowledge in dentistry. Like they'd want to hold it to themselves and, you know, they want to keep business to themselves and they wouldn't want to teach me as a young dentist. And then you find out you go to something like a Seattle Study Club and there's dentists there that are like kind of dying to pass things on and help you and things like that. And there's such camaraderie. And like, you know, sometimes if you go to like a state dental meeting, I always joke, you know, go to state dental meetings, sometimes you get people there that just want to franchise McDonald's. They don't even like dentistry and they're just there for the CE credits. And so I think I got turned off a little bit from, you know, going to things where I would meet other dentists, but maybe they weren't passionate about dentistry. And I was a little bit afraid. I mean, if I'm going to be totally honest, it's hard when you graduate from dental school and you got no money and then you start getting a little bit of money, but you've got loans you're paying off to want to spend any money at all on continuing education. And like, I was really hesitant to want to do that when I graduated. And I couldn't imagine spending $1,500 on something. Like I had never spent $1,500 on anything. And I was like, it's sure not going to be school.
Yeah.
And then now I look back and I was like, man, if I would have taken, you know, the little bit of money that you spend and invest in yourself, like it comes back so much into like the confidence that you have and the ability to make money doing dentistry. So that's one of the things I always, a big regret I have personally.
Yeah. And everybody finds himself. I mean, I love those stories. Like one of my favorite is John Cranham. Couldn't even afford a hotel room. So he had to sleep in his car at the hotel, and I can't remember the name of the hotel, but like he barely got enough money to get into the Dawson course. And he's like, this is really embarrassing, but I slept in my car and I showered at the pool and no one knew, you know what I mean? Like, that's how bad I wanted the education, but I couldn't afford it. And then you realize, wow, it's not so much the education. The education is really important. It's like the fire gets lit. Then you get to know these people and then they actually become friends over time. And then you're like, wow, now I just feel like I feel a lot more confident. And I'm being led, and I don't know what I'd do without mentors, but your point is spot on, Nate. Like it's one of those things, navigating the reality of what really is and what, you know, sometimes what we think is just isn't always true. What other last thoughts? Yeah, I know I don't get you all day. You're a busy guy. So what other last thoughts do you have on this space between reality and social media? Anything come to mind?
Nothing particular on this topic. Since you gave me one last opportunity to put in a plug for something, there's something I always like to put in a plug for anytime I get a chance, because it's kind of relates to this, because it's a great way to get evidence-based dentistry in an easy way. So there's something, and I think I might have mentioned the last time I was on, there's something called the Practice-Based Research Network, and it's something that we're in my department chairman, Greg Gilbert, runs this, but it's based on a big NIH grant. And, you know, it's, you know, I've had people sometimes ask me in the past, like, hey, Nate, I want to do some, I'm practicing dentist. I want to do some research for whatever reason, they think it seems like it'd be something fun to do. Can I fly to UAB and, you know, work in the lab for a day or two and do some research? I'm like, not really. Like, it's not, you know, you can't really get anything done in 2 days in the lab. Practice-Based Research Network is a cool thing where it's like you enroll in this network. It's totally free. You just Google National Dental Practice-Based Research Network, and you enroll in the network, and then they've got studies going on. So, like, one reason I'm passionate about it, because I just put in a grant maybe 2 months ago, and hopefully I'll find out soon if I get it. And if, like, for my grant, if I get it, what'll happen is I'll have to enroll like 200 dentists, and I'm looking at progression of interproximal caries. So, like, I will have the dentist send me bite wing radiographs of E2 or D1 or E1. Lesions, and they'll send them to me every year for like 3 years, and then we'll see how much these interproximal caries progress radiographically. But there's lots of other little studies like that. You know, there's one about partial caries removal that I think is going to be coming up, and there's one about cracked teeth and implant registry and all these different types of studies that have going on that you can enroll in as a practicing dentist. So that's something I always like to put in a little plug when I can, and I appreciate you giving me time to do that.
You mentioned that last time. You got to mention that every single time, because number one, that's phenomenal. Number two, the research is incredible, and what you're doing is awesome. I also want you to mention your Instagram, because I love it. I mean, again, I don't know what you're talking about half the time, because it's so like, it's really intelligent, funny stuff. So if somebody's listening, how do I find out more about Dr. Nate Lawson and tell them about your Instagram and what you do? Like, you do a lot of lives with some of the biggest names out there. What, like, where do I go? How do I find it? What do I do?
So for our Instagram thing, it's at Dentinal Tube. So it's supposed to be like dentinal tubules and then YouTube combined. So at Dentinal Tube, and it's on Instagram. I think it's also on Facebook. I don't really monitor the Facebook version of it as much, but yeah, that's a great way to kind of, we put some of our research studies on there. And it's funny, a lot of times people ask me a research question and then I'll have to go scroll through Instagram and find the picture, and then I copy it and then send it to them, because we post a lot of some of the data is not even published anywhere else. It's just on Instagram. So that's a place people can check out.
Yeah. Make sure you check that out. And again, if you haven't had Nate speak to your study club, dude, you're missing out. You got to get him to speak. So Nate, you know what time it is?
Oh,
all right. You got a few minutes?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So I always like to, we always like to learn about these educators and go a little bit away from dentistry. And so I don't even know what the question will be. So here we go. So all right, here's question number one. If you were to get a tattoo tomorrow, what would it be?
I don't have any tattoos, but I'm very close to my mom, and I actually asked my mom, I was like, Mom, what would you do if I got one of those, like, you know, those pirate tattoos, is like the heart and it says mom on it or something like that? That would be the one that I would get. And my mom was like, please don't get that tattoo.
Would it be a big one, like a really big one across your arm?
Not that big, but like, yeah, the one that would fit. I mean, it would look big on my arm. Yeah, that was the tattoo.
Mother's Day, you should get a fake one and go, honey, look, Mom, I love you. Told me not to, but I did. What do you think? You know, so
yeah, awesome. I think she would freak out a little bit. Yeah, she was not at all. And I thought she might thought that there was something sweet about that. No, she was just like, that's weird. So,
Yeah, I'm paranoid of tattoos, and mostly because, not because of the tattoo itself. I feel like I would be bored or not like it in like a year. And I'm like, that was a waste of time. And, you know, I thought it was really cool when Motley Crue had the, you know, what do you, the barbed wire around there and the 20 man, like all the, I'm like, if I ever, what's that? Sorry.
What would you get?
Kurt? I would probably get, I joke about this, but it's not a joke. Like once we got our company core values right, like it's probably the most important diagram I've ever had, only because I've died like 10 times not living by it. So I'd be like, if I ever get a tattoo, it'd probably be that, because that's just like the non-negotiables for the rest of my life is like, I just need people that are all in. I got to have, you know, these behaviors at work. So that would be mine. Here's question number two. Okay. This one's a good one for you. If you could try out a job just for a day, just to see if you like it, what job would you choose?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if I answered the question like very literally, I always for some reason thought that I thought I would like being an accountant. It's like it sounds like the world's most boring job. But like I'll talk to
all the jobs, all accountant.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like I was talking to my our financial advisor the other day, and I'm sitting here talking about like I'm terrible with money, like that. Hence, I'm an academic, whatever. But like I was talking about money, but I find it fascinating. Like I love the concept of making money, and I'd love to be able to make money, and I just love like the. I'm really good at saving money. I'm not as great at making money, but like, yeah, for some reason that was like, I just felt like if I would be really a great accountant, like better than dentist. And I just like to try it. It's funny. My mom was a nuclear medicine technology. She took the scans in the hospital. And when she retired, she went to go work for H&R Block. She took a job working at H&R. She did that for like 3 years. And that was her retirement. That's what she wanted to do for fun. Like she didn't need the money. She just wouldn't work at H&R Block. So yeah, maybe it's weird. How about you, Kirk? What's yours?
You know, I would naturally default like to like a musician or pro golfer, but that's too like, but if it was a real job, I think I would want to try to be a master chef. Like I'm terrible at it. But like for a day, like come up with all these creative, cause I'm a big fan of Diners and Drive-Ins. Like whenever the guy with the white hair guy, like when he's trying to, I watch it, I'm like, that looks amazing. And I always joke at home, like I'll pour a glass of wine and then I'll make stuff up. And the kids are like, this is terrible. And I'm like, no, but there was a lot of love that went into it. So I don't know if it would work for me, but I always envy somebody that can cook an amazing, and they just know like truffles and garlic and like all those things. And I should probably just enjoy eating it more than
me.
So,
well, yeah. When you say that actually does sound a lot better than accountant. I think that
well, now that you explain it, like, I think you'd be an amazing accountant. I've listened to you on materials. I have no doubt you'd be one of the, now I, on the other hand, would be out of business in no time. If I was an accountant. They'd be like kind of messy. Okay. So, here's another one.
Okay.
That was a research one. Okay. What's the most favorite decorative piece of artwork you own or anything like that? Like anything you own. Like in your house, you're like, oh, that's, or your condo or whatever. Like, I got to have that.
You know, one of the coolest things, so I went to college at Tulane in New Orleans, and New Orleans is just like an awesome art city, you know, cause we could go down to Jackson. Like if you're ever in New Orleans, if anybody's listening to this, they're in New Orleans and they want to get a good deal in art. I mean, you could walk down Royal Street, which is a street in the French Quarter that has all the fancy galleries in it, or you can try your hand at going around Jackson Square, which is the square in the middle of downtown New Orleans, and sometimes you'll see some of the artists that show in galleries, but they'll also be out there, and you can get the work for a lot cheaper. So that was always kind of my favorite thing to do. Would be, and they're not always that. It's less reliable. You don't know. Sometimes you're going to get just really crappy street art, but like sometimes you'll get this really nice stuff. So there's a guy named Michael Spoloro, where I don't know how you say his name. He does these really amazing watercolors of like New Orleans artists, and he sells them for $75. He's been selling them for $75 for like a decade. I don't know. And you'll see him in like people's houses in Birmingham and stuff like that. And so I actually called him on the phone the other day. I'm going to order more of them. And I'm thinking he's got to be charging more by now. And I'm like, he's still charging $75 for these big watercolors of these New Orleans artists. Like you could frame them in a, like a, I don't know. I'm not good with sizes, but a big frame. So that would be my answer, I guess.
How many do you have? Like just
right now I have one, but I'm going to order three more from him. And then I'll obviously spend more money framing them than I will buying the watercolors. But I should find, it's a great deal. And I've got some other New Orleans art that I really like too, and didn't pay that much at all for it. So
yeah, that's very cool. Sounds like good stuff. Good stuff.
I like you for it.
Mine's easy. So my son, I'm the assistant to the assistant of the Little League baseball team here in Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. Nobody cares. No one even knows. So this season or last season, we won the Little League champion in our tiny little 2 mile, but no one would ever remember except for the people that were there. And I have a 1 pound plastic trophy. It's the cheapest piece. But we won 7-6 in a walk-off pass ball. And I tackled the kid, and my son's on that team. It probably, other than being married and have kids, it was probably the single greatest day of my life. I cry. It was what, and so this plastic trophy is in the living room, and my wife is like, can we put that somewhere? No, I'm going to get an alarm and like a glass case and like a motion detector. Cause for one moment on one Sunday, everything was perfect in the pandemic. So that would be mine, you know? So people are like, what's the plastic trophy? I'm like, oh, I'm so glad you asked. It's good stuff. Well, buddy, I'm so grateful to have you on. I want to have you back again and again and again, just to cover different topics. Cause I know you can talk forever on the things that are cool and important, and you can make it interesting too. So thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, Kirk. It's always such a pleasure to get to talk to you, and it was the highlight of my day.
Well, we're going to get you to shoot higher than just talking to me. So we'll stick around when we say goodbye to everybody else. Thank you guys for watching or listening to the Best Practices Show, wherever you're listening. Do me a favor, keep sending us suggestions for shows. We're lining them up right now, and I'd love to have Nate back again and again. Send us suggestions for things you want to hear from Nate, and he will ask him the tough questions. But until we see you guys next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. And there you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.